It's showtime, baby. Let's go. Woo! Welcome to the show. This is Sports with Strawberry Ice. I'm your host, Iceman Jeff Trunipal. And as always, I bring you sports from a West Side point of view, right here in the great city of Cincinnati, Ohio, home of some of the best barbecue around, Midwest best barbecue. Don't forget, Friday night, my boys, Bengals Brews and Project Game Day and Rally Around the Natty will be at Midwest Best Barbecue for their draft party. If you guys do not have tickets, you can show up early. Cincy Hat's going to be there selling some of their hats. I don't know if Ted Karras is going to be there, but I know Cincy Hat's going to be there. So if you don't have tickets yet, you can go there early for that. If you do have tickets, enjoy it. I know Corey Dillon, my boy, just sent two autographed footballs that you guys can enter in the raffle. They're at Midwest Best on Friday night, and check it out. Also, don't forget, family-owned and operated, Meyer Door and Windows. Check them out for all your window and door needs at www.meyercincinnati.com. And again, I always say this, if you're on the West Side, go check out my favorite little sports bar. It's Hail Mary. It's your ticket to the game. It's right in the heart of Cheviot. They got a big-ass TV screen, beer specials. They always got food trucks there, and also free parking. If you've ever been to Cheviot, there's not a lot of parking. They got free parking right across the street, so it's really easy to get in and out of. Check out Hail Marys. What is up to everybody in the chat? What is going on? We got Brad in there, Paul Painter's in there, and yep, you're only two in there. So we got a lot of comments going on. We are 2 days away from the NFL draft, so I had to bring in some of my experts. You guys who've been grinding, doing draft mock after draft mock, and then somebody did a fake draft mock, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. Let's get to them. First one is Dallas Robinson. What's up, Dallas?
Hey, what's up, Jeff? How you doing? The draft is almost here, thank God.
Almost there. Yeah, exactly. I like I said, we're kind of burnt out. I'm kind of like ready to just find out what we're at. And we talk about it's off air. John Sheeran had an interesting mock draft he did this week, didn't he?
He did. He had a little anti-mock draft of players who he thinks the Bengals are not going to take, including a certain Louisville running back who I think they should consider, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, let's get John on. We can discuss that. Here's John. John, what's going on, brother?
So, guys, for the record, there's a 100% chance that one of those players gets taken by the Bengals. Like, that's just how that works. There's no way I go 10 for 10.
No way. No way. You're not. No way's that good, right, John? Not even John the Brain Sheeran. I mean, you're close, but you know.
The draft is the draft, man. It's you can't predict it.
Exactly. Now, this is kind of where my head is, and I want to see what you guys think about this. If Byron Murphy, if he's gone, if Latham's gone, those are two I think are the big ones that they might get or are trying to get at 18. If they're gone, do you guys see them possibly trading back? The Bengals have traded back a ton of times. Do you see that? I doubt they're going to trade up, but could you see a trade back if those two players are not there?
I'm going to say no, and I think the reason why is because, see, there's like two counteracting things to me. For one, this class is unusually stacked with pure first-round players, right, which is not always the case. You don't always get a true first-round talent with the 18th overall pick. So it's feasible that you could trade back a handful of spots and still get a similarly graded player. On the counter side of it is, I think the Bengals are uniquely positioned this year. I don't think they expect to really draft in the teens very often when Joe Burrow's the quarterback. I think ideally in a perfect world, they're drafting 32 every year. That's not going to happen, but they're probably making the playoffs more years than not.
Right.
Drafting 18th without having to trade up feels like an an anomaly with an elite quarterback. It's just what happens when he's injured for half the year. I think this is the year, especially now when there could be a blue chip caliber player at 18. Not saying that's going to be the case, but this year is more likely than maybe in past years. I think this is the time to just take advantage of that opportunity and just take the blue chip that happens to fall. Now, if that doesn't happen, I think the door gets opened back up for a trade, because like you said, trading back is 100 times more likely than trading up in the first round when it comes to the Bengals. But I think this year specifically, with a chance to get a true high 1B or maybe low 1A player at that spot, when in future years you're probably not going to get that chance, I think this is just the year to do it, just to elevate the roster.
That's what your thoughts?
I think it's a really good point, in specifically when it comes to this year's offensive tackle class. That's, you know, one of the deepest classes in memory. I think that when you're in this position that the Bengals are, like John mentioned, that if you're not going to have to trade up, you could potentially get a long-term starter at right tackle without having to do anything. They could just fall right into your lap. I think it's going to be hard to move back when that's kind of going to be on the table for the Bengals, specifically when you look at the teams that are right after them in the draft order. The Rams at 19, the Steelers at 20, Miami, Philadelphia, Dallas, Green Bay. I think all those teams, you can make a case for them drafting an offensive tackle in round one. So if you're the Bengals, is it really worth to go back 5, 6, 7 spots, pick up an extra second or third, and then miss out on this wave of offensive tackles that are going to go right above you? I don't think that's a risk that the Bengals are going to be willing to take, unless that there's just a bunch of players that they love that happen to fall to that range. But I don't see that happening. I think there's just too much risk, and I think it's too much of maybe not a guarantee that you're going to get a high-end offensive tackle at 18, but a pretty solid chance you're going to get one of those offensive tackles that you like, where I just don't think it's going to make sense to move out of that range.
Now, how about this? Let's just say Johnny Newton, because he's been falling since he didn't test, and, you know, people brought him in, they can find out the medicals, you know, when they bring him in, but most he hasn't tested, so technically you don't know what's up with his foot. He's starting to drop in some mock drafts. If he's there at the beginning of the second round, and say the Bengals do draft an offensive lineman at 18, would you guys package one or both of your second round picks, or maybe one third round pick and your second round pick, and try to move up to get Newton in the beginning of the second round if he's there? I mean, I would if he's there. But what's your thoughts? Go ahead, Dallas. Let you go first.
I definitely would. That'd be like the type of move I'd be very interested in, just because of what Johnny Newton showed on film with his with his testing, with his production. I think he's a first-round pick, and maybe the NFL doesn't agree, and maybe it's just the injury that forces him down into round two, but I think that's the type of trade the Bengals would be interested in making the move up for. You mentioned they have an extra third-round pick. That's an area we've seen them move up in that early second-round range before to get targeted players they want to go after, and you're right. If Johnny Newton falls, I mean, he's such a good fit for what the Bengals need immediately and long-term. I think that you'd have to consider it. And if it costs you one of those extra thirds, so be it. I think if you walk out of the first round with Johnny Newton and a J.C. Latham in round one, like you're pretty happy with that.
Dude, if we got both those, I'm like, we're done. Like, I'd be happy as hell. What do you got, John? What's your thoughts on that?
I think that this is a year where the Bengals seem like they're going to trade up in the second or third round, because they have that extra third round to play with. I don't think that they think the 10 picks are going to make this year's team, so that's another factor as well. Trading up this early in the draft, like, you have to look at Cam Taylor-Britt as a precedent. They traded up a handful of spots for him. They gave up a day three pick, but they did it because they felt like he was the last cornerback that was worth a second round pick, and they didn't want a chance missing him. Like, cornerback was a huge need in 2022. A lot of people thought that they were going to draft it in the first round. I guess they did technically if Dax Hill's a cornerback now, but that's a whole other thing. But if they pass on the defensive tackle, right? If they don't get Byron Murphy, and they view defensive tackle as that need that, yeah, like, we need to get one in the first two rounds. It's that big of a need for us in the short and long term. And they see Johnny Newton as that first round player. If he's in a reasonable range, I could see them moving up for him in the 40s. The problem with this is, as much as I love Johnny Newton, he's a 1A player to me, ignoring the medical and ignoring the injury concerns. That seems to be what is giving teams pause. And if he's falling for everybody into the 40s, I don't know if it's worth trading up for him when you could just see if he's there at 49 at that point. Right. If he's falling 40-something picks, there's reason to believe he could fall into the 50s. Like, I don't know how far this fall is going to be, but there was a report saying, like, the Jones fracture is really scaring teams because it's a really high risk of re-injuring, especially for someone his size. I thought the size itself was going to be the reason why teams are so split on him, just because he's got a short wingspan. He's 6'1", 300 pounds. That might turn some teams off who don't play a certain scheme. I don't have a problem with it personally. He's just a three-time technique through and through. But if the medical is as bad as some teams fear, I don't know if trading up for him is worth it.
Now, other question is, do you think they'd shock everybody? And James Rapine has said this. I'll be shocked if it is. My buddy Porkchop has said this. Would they go wide receiver at 18?
No.
I don't think so either, but I mean,
I don't think so. I mean, who do you think that would be? Is that Brian Thomas? Is that Eddie Mitchell?
Yeah, Brian Thomas is what I'm hearing.
I think there's enough depth. Don't you think there's enough depth in this class where they can wait?
That's what I think.
If they want to. I don't think it makes sense to do it at 18.
That's what I've said too. I mean, and I was out to eat with Porkchop Friday night. He's yelling at me, Jeff, they got to get a wide receiver. I'm like, dude, there's a ton of wide receivers they can get. I mean, it's not. I mean, I think it's like he's worried about replacing TB at slot, and I'm like, you got Gesicki there. Gesicki, I think he's gonna play slot a lot. I think Chase is gonna move around a lot, and they can get somebody later round. There's a very high quality or a bunch of quality wide receivers in this draft. I mean, I'd be shocked if they go wide receiver at 18. John,
yeah, I think like. Looking at T being tagged and how obviously big of a need that it'll be once he's gone, like I understand that logic. I don't think it's the same as maybe in past years when they've dealt with players who they expect to be gone in a year, because it's quite honestly, I think it's perfectly reasonable to assume that they believe that T's going to be here for 2 years. I think tagging him twice is perfectly on the table, whereas maybe this year it's about just finding the Tyler Boyd replacement. Now, I say that knowing that I don't think they're going to be looking for a pure Tyler Boyd replacement. I think they want someone who can play both on the inside and the outside. But I don't think that – I think that Brian Thomas isn't a perfect T. Higgins replacement. I think outside of the first round, there's probably not a true T. Higgins replacement anyways. This is probably just the year to take advantage of the depth, like Dallas said, in the second and third round. That's where you find a lot of those versatile inside and outside guys who would be the ideal evolution from a Tyler Boyd. And I think that they believe that obviously T's going to play this year, and if he plays well enough, he's worth the tag next year. So they can probably worry about truly replacing him a year down the road instead of right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've said this whole time. I think they're obviously tagging him this year. I think they're tagging him next year, and either T's playing 2 years on the tag, or next year's the year they trade him because they already had one extra year out of him. So next year, I think he's getting tagged twice. I don't know if he's getting traded next year or not, but I'm with you. I think he's getting tagged twice there. Now, we talked about Dax Hill. Where do you guys see him? I mean, I think he's probably going to be more of a slot corner, but I've heard some people – I think the Locked On Bengals guys are talking about possibly, you know, maybe moving him to the outside. But to me, that depends on if they draft a cornerback in this draft. Where do you guys see the move with Dax? They really haven't said anything about what they thought about doing with Dax Hill.
I recently wrote about this. Sorry, Dallas, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You wrote about it.
I think the fact that they haven't signed one yet, it's pretty shocking to me. I don't know if they have a deal like set in with a veteran maybe after the draft that they don't draft one, but they don't really do that. I'm just going to assume that they haven't signed one because I think they just view Dax as the first corner off the bench, and that could be inside or outside. And I don't love that plan because I don't think he's a natural outside cornerback, just like he wasn't a natural free safety coming out of college. He is like the ideal long-term replacement for Mike Hilton. He may not be the same exact in terms of being aggressive in the box and like a blitzer and that sort, but he can do very similar things. And he showed, you know, glimpses of that when he had the opportunity. The problem was he didn't have that much opportunity because he was back deep, you know, playing a position that wasn't natural to him. So right. I think now he's probably that fourth corner. And unfortunately, there's a great chance he's going to have to see the field on the boundary, which we have no idea. That's a total projection. He's going to have to spend most of the offseason kind of preparing for that. But they drafted him in the first round. He's obviously athletic enough to do something like that. And I think playing boundary cornerback is obviously less mentally taxing than playing free safety. So there could be an easier transition with that as well. So I personally think that he's probably the first cornerback off the bench. And hopefully he only gets to play in the slot because I don't know how he can play on the outside.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think that's the most likely outcome is that he is the top cornerback off the bench. I would not rule out the possibility. I mean, the Bengals are going to tell us in this draft like what their plans are with Daxton Hill, I think. If they take a corner in round two or three, then we know how they feel about Daxton Hill. Mm-hmm. And I think Jay and I have talked about this on our show. I would not rule out the possibility of Dax being traded during the draft, potentially. I mean, the Bengals brought in Geno Stone. They brought in Von Bell. They've got safety depth. If they draft a cornerback, John, like you mentioned, there's still cornerbacks out there. Stephon Gilmore is on the market. Steven Nelson would be like a perfect veteran, I think, fit as a cornerback for this team. Even somebody like a Kello Weatherspoon is out there. If you want to get somebody after the draft, who knows what Daxon Hill is even worth on the trade market at this point. Like I was grasping at straws trying to trade him to the Saints for a defensive tackle, Kalen Saunders. And I have honestly no idea what his value would be at this point, but I would rule out the idea that he's moved on draft day. If he's around, then yeah, I agree. I think he'll be an option outside in the slot long term, but that's where he's at now. He's a cornerback. I don't think you'll see him at safety anymore. You'll see him off the bench as a corner if and when injury strikes.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's athletic enough, fast enough to play outside. He just hasn't done it, and that's the scary part. So I'm with you. I think he's gonna be more of a slot guy and possibly move to the boundary, and we'll see what happens. Now, Paul Panther's got a question here about T. Higgins' contract. He says, why not sign T to a 2-year, $45 million and cut the guarantee money in half? Well, I can tell you this because his agent probably doesn't want him to do that. His agent probably wants to get a long-term contract. It would make sense if they're going to go, if they come up to him and say, hey, look, we're just going to tag him, so you might as well sign this and then you can go on. I mean, they could do that, but I think it all depends on his agent. What's your guys' thoughts?
I mean, I think T. Higgins would want a shorter contract, if anything, yeah, so we can hit the market again.
Right.
I don't think he's necessarily looking for a all that long term of a deal, but I don't know. I mean, I think I think at this point you have to expect he's going to be tagged again next year. At that point, is a team going to give the Bengals what they want to in exchange for him when he still has just the 1 year left, and whoever acquires him is going to have to hand him, it's going to be at that point $30 million per year, I think, and he's going to see Higgins will be a year older. I don't know. I think the most likely possibility is that they just hold on to him for this year, tag him again, and let him play out the contract. I'm not sure at this point. I don't think a long-term deal is going to happen. I think that the Bengals are all in on extending Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins, I think, will be here as long as the franchise tags allows the Bengals to keep him. But I just don't see a longer-term deal like ever coming to fruition.
He's not taking less than Devontae Smith after Devontae Smith signed. It's the most comparable player that to him that has signed this offseason. Just the building up of, I think it was what, it's been Calvin Ridley, Michael Pittman Jr., not in this order, and like Jerry Jeudy, he got a bag too. Like all these guys going first only benefits T. Higgins. He's not going to take an offer that may have been reasonable even like a month or two ago. Like that's just how this works, right? He's going to be the next one up whenever that is the case. And he's obviously he and his agency have planted the flag that I want to be paid like wide receiver one, and the guaranteed money that I want reflects that. So no, I don't think 2 years, $45 million would even come close to getting it done, which is why we are where we are right now.
Right. Exactly. I mean, the biggest thing I think for his agent is, his calling card is getting his players guaranteed money. I mean, basically, T's guaranteed about that with the 2 years of tagging. I mean, it's about 45, 47, somewhere around there, depending on next year what the top five is going to be. But that's about where he's basically guaranteed right now if he gets tagged. So he doesn't really have to sign anything. He's going to get that either way if they tag him. So there's really no point in negotiating it, and T can get his money, you know, either next year or the year after that. But so get back to the draft here. Devontae Sweat, he's one that beginning of this I was big on. And then he had the DWI, and there's still questions about his weight. And I thought he might have been a second round. Now I'm heard he might be third, fourth round. Like size and everything, I think he's the perfect guy to replace DJ Reader. But we don't know about his motor. We don't know about him keeping the weight up. We had this same problem with Shelvin. Where are you guys at on Trevion Sweat?
Man, I think he made a lot of sense as the day two pick for them because he's the closest thing to DJ Reader in this class. But the nature of the nose tackle spot is that it's pretty devalued, and you can find similar players later just because that's just the value of who they are. I think after meeting with him, obviously, to get more information just about his background, I think that was the purpose of that meeting, only for what happened to happen, like, not a week later.
Right.
Doesn't do very well for him. I think he's going to go on day three, and I don't foresee this to be a Joe Mixon situation where they have him on their boards and other teams do not. I just don't really see it. I think if he's there on day three, maybe late, I think maybe you take a swing on it, but there's a chance he goes maybe earlier on day three, and I don't think the Bengals are going to be in the position for that.
I mean, he failed the pre-draft IQ test, right? I mean, he just absolutely did. It's there. I've got him going 79th to Atlanta, late round three in my final mock. Like I think he's got the talent. He's got the size to obviously be picked much higher than that. And whether I think it's going to take a team like Atlanta, maybe that's kind of all in on this season, that says we don't care about the off-field stuff, we don't care about the motor stuff, we like the production, we like what's on tape, we like the size, we're going to take a chance on him. I don't know if the Bengals are there. I think it, like John said, I think it would be have to be later. I think it would be on day three. I don't think they're going to. I think with the way the Bengals locker room is right now, I just don't know that they want to add somebody who just went through this type of thing, you know, unless it's a late, late pick where it's just pure upside, no risk. And doing that in the third round is not no risk. So I just think it's probably too early.
Yeah, and then like I said, he failed the IQ test. It's like it's just like you were doing so good, moving up in the draft, and then you go and do something like that. It's just that just goes to your mental process. I mean, this is the biggest job interview of your entire life. Don't go out and get drunk and drive a car and wreck. I mean, you know, call an Uber, do something. It's, you know, just hold. You couldn't hold off for a couple more weeks. I mean, that's just a big red flag. And he had the party guy, you know, tag on him anyway. This didn't help. So that's where I think in general he's a day three for any team. I don't know if anybody's gonna go up and get him just because of that. That's just my thought. And it kills me because I really liked him and I think he could be a very good player. And you never know. Maybe he gets drafted and he gets his head on straight and he doesn't do anything stupid anymore. And maybe this is a wake up call for him. I don't know. It's very interesting that he did what he did. Let's get to Jake Browning here. Now, are you guys surprised that they signed him to a 2-year contract? I wasn't really, but I mean, were you guys surprised about that?
I was a little surprised. I mean, they didn't have to do it. Right? Yeah. I mean, he was.
But that's the thing they do now. They do a lot of stuff they don't have to do. So.
Totally. I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, he was under contract at what could have been like league minimum rates for 2 years and then restricted free agency after that. But man, I think a guy goes out and does what Jake Browning does last year from like total obscurity to go to where he was last year, almost getting the Bengals in the playoffs. I think it's like a good sign. Again, going back to what the locker room we just talked about, we're going to reward this guy who has been on this team, like working his way up on the practice squad for years, finally took advantage of his opportunity. Doesn't that have to send a message to the rest of the locker room? I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, to give him that type of financial security when you didn't necessarily even have to do that. I think it's just like a good locker room kind of signing, even if we haven't even seen the numbers, right? So I don't even think it really matters what the numbers are. I'm sure it's low for like a backup quarterback. So I think it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, financially, like Dallas said, like they held all the cards here, right? Yeah. They had all the leverage because he's an exclusive.
They didn't have to do anything. Yeah.
So they could have paid him a year for they could have paid him $915,000 for a year, and then next year would have run up just above $1 million. So it would have been essentially if they had done this twice, it would have been 2 years, $1.9 million. I think it's going to be 2 years, $2.5 million at most. I think there's going to be a slight pay bump and whatnot. It's a good point about rewarding him for just the work that he did, but also this is why the Bengals don't max out in free agency so they can overpay on some other guys, maybe their own. No, that's too much. Just because this is nothing, right?
Makes sense.
I feel like they've been looking for a backup quarterback better than Brandon Allen, and I all of a sudden they just found it in Jake Browning. I don't think he's not a backup that like does more than just what the scheme allows him to do. But once you find that guy that you're comfortable with, you might as well just pay him 5% more. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. All right, now we did talk about Byron Murphy a little bit, but where do you guys, my son Chandler's bringing it up here, where do you guys actually see Murphy landing? Will he be there at 18, or is he gone well before this? What's your guys' thoughts? Dallas, gotta let you go first.
I don't think he'll be there. I mean, like I do think there's a chance he's the first defensive player off the board. I mean, just the idea of how important interior pressure is now and the fall, if Johnny Newton's stock is going to drop because of the medical or whatever, there's just no other interior defensive tackles who are going to be drafted this high, which is going to push Murphy even higher. I've got him going 15th in my mock, so like just before the Bengals. I could see him going as high as 8th to the Falcons, I think. I mean, there's no reason. I think I've got them penciled in to take an edge rusher, but I could see them taking Byron Murphy. I think there's no reason he could not be a top 10 pick.
Falcons make a ton of sense because I think a player who compares really well to Byron Murphy is Grady Jarrett. So like there's precedent there for that type of player working out. I think if you look at a bell, if you were to put his like expected draft positioning on a bell curve, I think the top is like in between 12 and 14, mm-hmm. which means I think there's a greater chance that he's a top 10 pick than if he lasts 18. I just don't see him falling out of the top 16. I think Seattle would stop his slide before as like a last resort. So yeah, like this is a lot similar to maybe Emmanuel Forbes last year, where mm-hmm. everyone started hopping on that train towards the end, and of course he was always going to get picked a lot sooner than most people expected. It's just he's the consensus best defensive tackle in a class with not a lot of high end options. Obviously, the position has skyrocketed in terms of monetary value across the league. It's just a premium on guys like that, and in a class where there's just not a lot like him, I'm not going to say he gets overdrafted, but he gets drafted sooner than people expect.
So where are you guys at 18? So with all with Murphy's not there, Newton, you guys got Newton being gone before then. Is Newton there, or is this gonna be a Mims? Because I keep going back. Looks like Mims is gonna be there. That's the one that just keeps sticking out in my brain. I love Latham to be there. I don't think he's gonna be there. But what do you think the pick is? Is it Latham? Is it Mims? Is it Newman? Who is it? What do you guys think?
I think Latham's probably, if Latham's there, I think he's probably the pick.
Yeah. Yeah, if he's there, yeah.
And then maybe Murphy or Mims. So by process of elimination, I don't think any of us think that Latham's going to last that long. I think he's probably going to be the second tackle off the board. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a lot of sense considering his pedigree and whatnot. So Mims does seem like the most likely pick. It's just so weird with him because I think Pittsburgh really likes him too, and they've been known to trade up. They did it last year for his former teammate, Broderick Jones, so that makes a ton of sense if they're willing to do that. There's been talk about him falling out of the first round. I think Jordan Schultz tweeted, like, teams love him. He's going to go sooner. Like, he's all over the board, which means that the truth probably is somewhere in the middle. I don't think he leaves the top 20. I think Pittsburgh is his floor, but I think if he reaches Cincinnati and Latham and Murphy are both off the board, which we expect that to happen, I think he's probably the pick.
I think Mims will go to the Steelers. I mean, the Steelers like tip their first round pick every single year.
Yeah.
It feels like, doesn't it? It's like everyone knows it's Mims or Graham Barton this year, it feels like. So I've got Joe Alt going, I've got Fashanu going, and Fontenot going, and Fuaga going. So I've got Latham as the fifth offensive tackle, and I've got him to the Bengals. I've had him there.
Dude, I hope you're right. That'd be awesome.
But I could absolutely see him being as early as the second offensive tackle. I guess. I don't know. There was a tweet from Lance Zierlein that was saying like how teams view these offensive line prospects and like what positions they're able to play. And he did not have Latham as viewed as like a left tackle versatile, whereas a lot of these other guys can, which would be the only reason I didn't put him somewhere like I did with the Saints, where I sent Fontenot, or to the Broncos, where I sent Fashanu. That's the only reason I have Latham dropping, but I could easily see him going earlier. But he's been my pick at 18. I don't know. I feel like if he's there, if he's there and available, he will be the pick. I guess Mims would be my backup option. I wouldn't rule out a guy like Graham Barton, though. I wonder like if they think he could play right tackle, but he could obviously play left guard immediately if they wanted him to, and maybe see if he could play right tackle long term. I don't know, but he's another guy that I can't kind of get out of my mind as like an option at 18.
I will say with Latham, real quick, Jeff. Like I feel like just his. His entire pre-draft, people have been so, not confused, but they've been curious as to why he didn't test, and maybe it's because, people don't think he's that good of an athlete, and he wants to hide it. And I think that skepticism can hurt a player who is a fringe first-round player, mm-hmm. but I think if he was being told that, look, you have teams in the top 10 visiting you pretty much exclusively, there's no real reason for you to test. The only thing that's going to happen if you do test like an average athlete, and this offensive line class as a whole is so athletic. It's more athletic than most in recent years. If he stands out like a sore thumb in the negative way, that can only hurt him. Mm-hmm. So that's always been my kind of logic where like he's been told he's going to be like a pretty high pick, and that's why he didn't test. And obviously with the teams that have visited him, like that seems to back that up. But Dallas is right. Like if teams view him more as a limited guy, maybe only fits certain schemes because of that lack of athleticism, I could see, like, I mean, obviously stuff happens all the time in the draft that we don't expect. So I that could be the reason why he could fall. And obviously, like, the Bengals and what they value in offensive linemen, like, I don't think they would have issues compared to maybe what some other teams do.
Yeah. Okay, so what if Jahyan Newton's there? I mean, because you talk about the foot and everything, that he could be there if people are that worried about it. Do you take him over, say him and Latham, or him, Latham, and Mims are there? are you taking Johnny Newton over all of them? Because he could potentially could be really, really freaking good, but we do need a right tackle. Where do you guys see Johnny Newton falling in this draft with the foot issues?
It's hard to say. I mean, without having access to the inside medical information that these teams have, right? I mean, I think that's going to be the thing that ultimately kind of determines where he goes. In my mock, I've got him 30th. I mean, I'm sure Bengals fans will hate to hear this. I've got him falling to the Baltimore Ravens at number 30. So
bad Dallas, bad Dallas.
I mean, can't you just imagine that him falling there and the Ravens just like run to turn that card in? Like, come on, we can all see it.
That would suck.
But I wouldn't be surprised if he falls to round two at all. But it's just kind of hard to say without knowing that inside info.
Man, if he didn't have a foot injury, I would take him probably over 250 players in this draft. He's legitimately.
I'm with you.
The logic is simple. The Bengals have not had the chance to draft a player who has a really good chance of being Geno Atkins since Geno Atkins. Mm-hmm. And of course, he was drafted in 2010. You know, long before teams thought, oh, we can have guys who play at 290 and 300 and 3 technique. That's perfectly fine, right? Okay. So everything matches. The film, the data, just everything. It's like this guy has a really good chance of being a multi-Pro Bowl defensive tackle, maybe even better. It's just the question of is the foot a thing, right? And I think that's the reason why the Bengals really like him, but I don't know if he's going to be the pick at 18 just because of that.
Yeah, I mean, he was in town last week, so they got their medical guys to look at the foot, so they're going to know. Obviously, they'll know more information than we will. That's what this year is so – like, last year, I was so set on we were drafting a tight end. I thought we were drafting a tight end. It's going to happen. We didn't draft one single tight end, which still irritates me to this day. They wouldn't draft anybody. But this year is at 18. It's to me, the first and second round, I think, are going to be trenches-based. It's going to be – what the thing is – but if Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton are both gone by the second round and we didn't get either one of them and say we got Mims at 18, then what do you do? That's where I'm like, I don't know then. Because I always just say Trayvon Sweat, but now he's falling off for me because of the DWI. If all those guys are gone and say we drafted Mims at 18, who do you guys got for the second round for him?
John, after you. I'll let you
Okay. I think...
You see the wheels turning. The brain is going. You see the wheels turning.
Like, wide receiver makes sense, but I don't know if there's going to be a wide receiver that they like there. I think Keon Coleman's going to go a little bit before, and he checks a lot of their boxes. I think both Roman Wilson and Ricky Pearsall will be outliers to them. So that makes me think wide receiver might be in round three, where they have two picks. Maybe the value's a little bit better. Defensive tackles in round two, I think two really stand out. I think Chris Jenkins and Ruk Arororo are both check a lot of their boxes. I mean, Clemson, Michigan, right? You can't leave a Bengals draft without taking a guy from one of those schools.
Right.
But I think both of them, they have different skill sets. Chris Jenkins is obviously a little bit more better against the run, where Ruk is more of the athletic freak with longer arms, who can also kind of two-gap in that sense. I think both of them are pretty prime targets in the second round, to be honest. I think them wanting Murphy so much in round one tells me that it's not gonna be a tight end situation where the board just doesn't fall like match up and we're just gonna pass on the position. I think they do want to take an early pick at defensive tackle, and I think the value in round two matches up more than round three compared to wide receiver.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Arojo's a guy I think I've gonna probably put as their second round pick in my final mock, and I think it makes a lot of sense because I do think as deep as this wide receiver class is, I think there's a good chance that a lot of the interesting guys are just not there at 49. Xavier Leggett, Jalen Polk, Ladd McConkie, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman, Pearsall. I've got all these guys coming off right before the Bengals go at 49. So I think you're right that there's more options at wide receiver that they could go for in round three, whereas defensive tackle kind of does fall off like pretty quickly here. I mean, if there are a couple of interesting guys that might be of interest, and we could talk about those. I mean, maybe some of those late nose tackles, but there is a steep decline, I think, after these defensive tackles that the Bengals could consider at pick 49, where it just makes more sense from a game theory perspective, I think, just to target defensive tackle and then go wide receiver on round three.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like you said, the Dallas, if Byron Murphy does, if he is the second defensive player off the board, then for defensive tackle, that's then the next one up for the Bengals on their list, I think, would be Johnny Newton. Then now with other team with that, if Byron Murphy goes earlier than expected, does that boost Jonnie Newman up more and put him higher and harder for the Bengals to get? Because if you don't get those two, is there a first-round defensive tackle to take? I don't know of one.
I don't think so. I mean, like, Michael Hall is, like, a guy who people have, like, flirt, like, maybe put into the – sneak into the first round, but I'd be surprised. Like, I don't think Chris Jenkins or Herro is going to sneak into round one. So, no, I would say Newton is the only other guy that would go in top 32, if at all.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Is Marsh – I can't even remember his first name. Is like, Nealon? Is the guy from, like – Nealon, yeah. He's an edge, right?
Yeah.
I think maybe he's an edge in PFN. Like, I have seen people call him, like, a more of an interior player, though. Yeah. So, yeah, he's, like – he is one guy, yeah, he could sneak into.
Well, so, that's the thing, though. It's, like, is – depending on how high the Bengals value those two spots, that's where I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen. But would the Bengals start getting the itchy trigger finger going, all right, these teams might jump ahead of us and get Byron Murphy? Would that be the first time the Bengals trade up to a first round since 1995, you know, and Kajana Carter? Would they then trade up to try to go get him? Because – who knows? Maybe he moved up so much and this guy is that good. Or are they just wait and see they're okay with Jonnie Newton's foot and they wait and hope he falls 18th? Because the more I talk about this, there's tackles we can get, I think, in the second round. These two, with the departure of DJ Reader, I mean, and these are actual, they're not noses, but they're with his departure, they really need to fill that spot and at least get that rotation. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, but I think the priority is going to take a tackle in the first. I think that's just the way the class is set up.
Okay.
No, but I understand like your point of view. I think there's deeper options with tackle compared to defensive tackle. I just think with offensive tackle, it's such a prioritized position all across the league that even if there is perceived greater depth in day two, like those guys go off the board earlier than you expect. And
right.
Like I don't think they're going to be wanting to sit there at 49, twiddling their thumbs, seeing which tackle's going to fall to them. That could be the scenario, just like Taylor Britt, that the last guy, like maybe it's Blake Fisher, right? And maybe that would be a reach compared to where he's expected to go. But maybe that could be like, this is the last guy that is even worth a pick on day two. We need to trade up and sacrifice, you know, fourth or fifth or whatever it takes. Like, I don't think they trade up in the first for Murphy just because I think they want to keep as many picks in the top 100 as they can. I think it would take one of those third round picks to do it. So round two, if they do pass on a tackle in the first round, that is the scenario where, like, yes, there's more depth, but those guys go off quickly, and I don't think they would want to wait around to see who's left.
I also think, like, trade prices in the first round might be out of control. Like, who knows what the Vikings are going to have to send to go up to number four, number five, and, like, who knows if the Broncos are going to move up the Raiders. And I know those are going to be quarterback trades, but, like, that's going to set the market, I think. Like, expected prices to move up. Like, I don't see the Bengals doing that for a non-quarterback. Like, I don't see that happening.
Right, Pork Chop here, we got a comment here. He says, Michael Hall is nowhere near Newton or Murphy as far as skills. So he's not a Michael Hall fan. Speaking of the quarterbacks here, now I keep hearing Minnesota's going to move up. The Patriots might trade, which, honestly, if I'm the Patriots, I don't know why in the hell you trade out of there because you got a chance to get one of these quarterbacks. The kid from Michigan, what's his name?
McCarthy.
McCarthy, thank you. He's moving up, and I think somebody's going to reach for him. Bo Nix is starting to jump in. I think somebody's going to reach for him. There could be potential of at least, what, five quarterbacks, six quarterbacks taken in the first round? I mean, where are you guys at? You think it's going to, the first 10? You know, the first 10 picks, there could be, you know, five quarterbacks taken on those? What do you guys think? John, you got a smug look on your face, John. I'm curious.
Because I know Dallas has been mocking this, so he's got an answer.
Oh, my God. I had six quarterbacks for a longest time. I think I'm going to take Bo Nix out. I just can't. Yeah. I can't have him in the
room. His name's coming up more.
I know.
Yeah.
I still think the Raiders are going to take Penix at 13. Like, mm-hmm. I really do. There's just too much smoke there. It just makes too much sense. But I don't know. I think I've got the Giants trading up like early in round two for Bo Nix, but I think it'll be just the five. And I don't know. I think that everyone's pegging the Cardinals to like trade out for and let the Vikings go to number four. But if I'm the Cardinals, I've already got like seven top 100 picks. Like, I need players. Marvin Harrison's right there. Like, I'm not getting cute. I'm taking him. Now, if I'm the Chargers at five, like, that's the team. They're rebuilding. I mean, they need to get future picks and draft capital I think they make all the sense in the world to trade back,
right,
get 11, get 23, get a future first, and kind of reset this year. I would say four out of the top five, I think, will be quarterbacks, and then Penix probably to the Raiders at 13. That's how I see it.
This is the final few days are my favorite time just to watch the quarterback rumors swirl, because last year,
yes,
Will Levis was supposed to be the second overall pick,
and then
he was left waiting. Then he got dumped because he wasn't the first round pick, and then he ended up being pretty decent. No, JJ McCarthy's not going second overall. Like that was
that's the craziest shit ever. Like, why the hell would he go second?
It's just sports books, holding out some cheese for people to take, and then they snatch them and they take their money. McCarthy's going like fifth or sixth at this point. And I think the Chargers make too much sense to trade down. I think Jim Harbaugh's going to see JC Latham at 11th being like, that's my tackle. And I think if he can get him at 11th and not five, I think that's the perfect scenario. It's just a matter of if the Giants or the Vikings trade up. I think the Vikings are obviously more desperate. They have that extra ammo to do so. But yeah, I'm with Dallas here. I think five's a pretty safe number with Penix either being that 13th overall pick, or maybe a team like the Raiders trading up back into the first round again.
Right. Now, the two big names that Bengals fans keep talking about is, one is Justin Jefferson. Not going to happen. The other one is Brock Bowers. And if I get my mouse work here, GB wants to know, how would you guys feel if the Bengals move up for Bowers, even if it costs a lot of draft capital?
I would not do that. No.
I love Bowers. I think he's great, but our need at right tackle and our need at its interior defensive line is too big to go get a tackle. That's why they went and got Gesicki, I think. I know Gesicki's not a great blocker, but that's why he got Sample. So I think, you know, they're set there. I mean, and Mitchell Wilcox just signed with New England, so I think they're set in the tight end room. I don't think Bowers, even if Bowers is 18, if Bowers is 18 and somebody's dying to get him, the Bengals could. That's one where they could. Hey, we're gonna draft Bowers and get somebody to bite and, you know, trade back. But I don't think Bowers is gonna be there, and I don't think the Bengals are gonna draft him. I just don't.
Even if he's a slot, which is basically what he is, you're mm-hmm. trading him for a slot receiver. I don't see it. But Dallas, just because you are a Minnesota native, I am curious what, if you've talked to any Vikings fans about the Justin Jefferson stuff, and do they think the Bengals fans are as crazy as I think they are?
Justin Jefferson is not playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's just put that out there. Like,
He's not.
That's just not going to happen. No, I'd be like, I don't know what's taking so long in the extension. I mean, it seems like that the numbers should be. I mean, making the highest paid non-quarterback. How hard is this? Let's just get it done. But
one thing I brought up is they could trade. If they want to try to get a quarterback, because they're rebuilding. They want to get a quarterback. Justin Jefferson's a guy you could trade to the Bears for their second first round pick. And go that route. The Bears could have Caleb Williams and Justin Jefferson. If you do that, that's more makes more sense to me. Then Minnesota trading Justin Jefferson to the Bengals. Why in the hell? What do we have that we can give Minnesota that would make them want to trade him to us? We don't have anything. That's what I just don't get. I mean, I've had this conversation over and over and over again. People are like, oh, I think it's going to happen. Like, no, it's not. If the Bengals have a hard time signing T. Higgins, how the hell are they going to have the money to sign Justin Jefferson, who's going to make more money than Chase? I don't know. It's craziness, dude.
The Bengals would need two Joe Burrows to make that happen, essentially.
Exactly. All right, here. Ken's got a question for us. The top tackle in the draft. Do not have long arms on this here.
Doesn't seem like a question.
No, more of a statement. Long arms matter. I thought you were asking a question there, Robert. let's try this one here. Robert, what's up, guys? Who did for life? Best be at right tackle or defensive tackle taken in the first two picks, then go GBA position of most need. What's up, guys? I guess he's asking, which ones do you think will get there? Best right tackle. Who would be the best right tackle, I guess, for the Bengals to get 18th?
I think
it's Latham still. I mean, I think that's the dream. I think it's Latham, yeah. Yeah, more Mims.
Yeah. I want to get back to Mims here since you brought that up. Are you guys concerned, because his size and athletic ability is off the chart, that what everybody's concerned about is his snaps, his games he's played. To me, if the Bengals draft him, it's a perfect spot for him. He can learn behind Trent Brown until either Trent Brown gets hurt, which hopefully he wasn't. He doesn't, or you know, he can just stay behind him all year and become the right tackle next year. I think that is scaring some teams. Does that scare you guys as far as the amount of snaps and the amount of games he's played?
People equate lack of experience for lack of ability far too, and it makes sense because more times than not, that's the case. It's not the case with Mims because on the field, he looks like someone who's far more experienced than he is. I know people look at the 8 starts. He has played in 30 games.
Yeah.
Like the total snaps is like, I think, 800 something. So it's not obviously a lot. He came in late in a lot of games just because Georgia was killing these teams when they were undefeated at the time. When he started, and he started obviously against the best teams in the country, he's looked very much like the part. It's not a case of they're taking a guy, in this case, that would have to just learn all this technique and people equate him as a project. Obviously, he needs more seasoning, and that just comes with being on the field more often. But like you said, being under two, not one, but two guys who are built exactly like him, by all accounts, people say that he's very dedicated to his craft and making sure that his physique is in order, because it's easy for guys that big to kind of, you know, like a DeAndre Sweat, where their weight fluctuates, like a DeJuan Jones last year. That's not really been a case with Mims. I think he's very unique in that sense. And then it all comes down to, can he stay healthy at that size? And obviously the whole durability concerns, I think, have also kind of just been on their own little narrative, where this guy had tightrope surgery. If you come back from that too often, like, you can re-aggravate it, which is exactly what happened, and it can also lead to a hamstring injury, which is exactly what happened at the combine. We've seen this with other players before, obviously maybe not at that size, and that's a concern, but I think people view Mims as a project when he's just someone who just hasn't played a lot, but when he has played, he's looked really good.
And I think you're right that it's kind of a perfect situation if he were to come to Cincinnati, where he's not going to be asked to play immediately. Uh-huh. He could be that swing tackle option, but they signed Trent Brown for a reason. I know it was a cheap contract, but Trent Brown's a guy with what, 70, 80, 90 games worth of starting experience. Like, he's going to be the right tackle. Uh-huh. You could get a guy like Mims and let Frank Pollack work with him throughout the summer, throughout the season. You hope he doesn't have to play. If he does, hopefully he can kind of play with those other veterans on the line that he's been practicing with and fit in, and then he takes over as a starter next year. I don't know. I wonder if the Bengals are viewing it. And I think I said this last time I was on, Jeff, like, Latham feels like he's a double and Mims feels like he's a home run swing.
Right.
And it's
right.
Like, are the Bengals comfortable taking that home run, or they just want to get on base? And I don't know. I'm not sure what way they're thinking. I think the signing of Brown does give them the option to go with that high upside pick if they want to, but I don't necessarily know if that's the direction they want to go in.
Yeah, I mean, if I said this on here on the show, if Latham's there, I think they're taking him. That's the pick if he's there. But the more we talk, more I'm like, I don't know if he's going to be there or not. And that's why I just keep going back to Mims. I think he might be the best one available if you stick at 18. I think everybody else that's ahead of him might be gone by then. And the more you think about it, more it could be a good spot. Because, you know, he's not somebody I think you want to plug and play, especially on a Super Bowl contending team. So it might be a very good spot for him. Now, the other question is, what do you do if at guard? Is there, because I know people keep going at Cordova. So I think Volson has gotten better. You know, I don't think that's really an option. But do you guys see them potentially trying to draft somebody who could play both? You know, he could challenge Volson at guard this year and then kick out the right tackle next year. I'm not saying Mims. I don't think Mims can do that. But there are guys out there.
I mean, I think most of these offensive tackle prospects could play left guard too, which is kind of the benefit of getting a guy like a Fontenot or even a Latham, where it's okay, if they're not playing right tackle, then they can compete with Cordell Volson. So I do think that makes sense. And I wouldn't rule out a late round, just like pure interior option too. I mean, Ted Karras is getting up there. Kappa's contract will end eventually. I mean, I think that in terms of just planning for the future, you could add another interior option, but I would say whoever they add at 18, if he's not the right tackle starter, then he'll at least get a chance to see some action at left guard.
I'm projecting a little bit here because I obviously don't have ears inside the building. I think they are or should be done with drafting tackles who can also play guard. Uh-huh. I think in terms of versatility, I think it's be a swing tackle, potentially develop and cross train at both sides or in the interior, be able to play all three positions. But I think tackle to guard flex is something that should be, if not, it's already in the past. They tried it with Jackson Carmen. They tried it with Deontay Smith. Obviously, two less talented players than you would draft in the first round anyways. And I think, in general, when you draft a guy in the first round, there's the expectation that he could be able to develop at multiple spots. But I think going from guard to tackle is something that we saw Andrew Whitworth do, and people just think it's just emulatable for everyone else.
Right,
and
right.
It's not. And even in that case, like Whitworth went from left guard to left tackle. People are asking, like, Faletanu to go from left guard to right tackle. Like, it's not as easy as people may think it would be. And yeah, in a perfect world, you can have a guy play left guard 1 year, then have to develop at right tackle. Two positions, by the way, that he hasn't really played a lot in terms of just his career snaps and everything. I think for the interior, though, I think they would want to take someone who could back up all three spots and provide quality depth for Volson. I don't know if they want to necessarily push him or draft a guy to start over him, just because they've spent a lot of resources and time developing him as a starter. I think they would still like him to be, you know, grow as a starter, but a guy in the fourth or fifth round to potentially be a center of the future and back up at both guard spots, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Now that brings me to JPJ, Jackson Powers Johnson. He's probably the best center in the draft. Where do you guys – I mean, I think the Bengals would like to get him. I don't think they're going to be able to, but where do you guys see him at? Because he can play guard and center.
He's got injury concerns too, which makes me think he could fall out of the first round maybe. Yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, I think that there are a lot of guys on day three who could at the interior who like could maybe not start in year one, but could be long-term starters at center or guard. So if you're a Jackson Powers Johnson who's maybe a fringe first round pick as is, and now you've got these medical concerns, I could see him falling out of the first round. But I did want to say that's a really good point, John. Like, I think it's easy to say, like, get your best five on the field, and like that's always that's like the ideal solution. But you're right though. I mean, as much like trouble as the Bengals have had with those conversions, maybe you're right that it is time just to forget about that. Focus at right tackle and not worry about playing on the interior. That's a really good point. I do wonder if they're thinking that as well inside the building.
Yeah, I think their main targets at tackle are just guys who they feel confident can last at tackle. Like, right. My biggest thing with Fuaga, I think he's a Pro Bowl guard in the future and someone who could be more limited at tackle, specifically in the Bengals offense. Maybe the same can be said about Faletanu, even though he's got longer length. But I think they're just looking at that spot and just solidifying it for years to come, because, God, when was the last time it has been solidified? Andre Smith? Is that?
Right. Probably.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The last time. So, all right, I don't keep going back to the interior defense line, because I'm concerned about this, because we had a hard time stopping the run last year. If we don't get Byron Murphy, if we don't get Johnny Newton, what in your guys' opinion, what do the Bengals do? I think they got to add to that rotation somehow. What's your guys' thought process? What do you think they're going to do there?
I mean, I think it'll be spots that they hit in the mid rounds. I mean, I think they would come back on round two and see who the available options are. They would do the same on round three. I don't know, like, what the free agent market looks like right now for defensive tackles. I guess they could go out and sign Calais Campbell, but
would that make them take a chance on Travion Sweat? I mean, that's kind of, he's the other, I mean, I know it's three tech, no tackle, different, but run stopper. I mean, do they take a chance on him then? If they, you know?
No.
That's still like, no, we're out.
First of all, it's Tavondre Sweat.
Tavondre, right. Sorry. Thank
but
you.
I do think that, like, day two is probably their sweet spot for the position. I understand, like, I still get the idea that, like, the drop-off after Newton and Murphy is pretty stark. But I think right now it's just about finding that third piece. Like, they tried to do it with DJ Reader. They tried to re-sign him. Obviously, that didn't work out. I think they remember what happened in 2021 when they've had three guys that they could rotate in those spots. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's going to look different because they don't have a true nose tackle. And again, I think they can find more of a natural nose on day three of the draft. But like day two has always been kind of their sweet spot for drafting defensive tackles. Succeeding in that regard, not so much, because I think, like, I mean, their track record at defensive tackle drafting is worse than offensive line. And I don't think people like to remember that, but there hasn't been a lot of quality defensive tackles they drafted in recent years, but I do think that round two, there's pretty good value with some of those guys that could be there, maybe even into round three.
Dallas, what do you got? What do you think they'll do?
It's tough because, I mean, I know it's been a talking point that's been rehashed. Like, you look at
it's the thing that's got me if there's anything that's got me up at night, is that. Because there's two guys. And Sweat, you can't count on him now. So that's where I don't know what they'll do. This has got me worried. We're in the AFC North. We got to stop the run.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. If you're looking for a guy who's going to create pressure, I mean, all the highest paid defensive tackles, like almost exclusively, are found in round one. Like almost exclusively. So the farther you get into day two and day three, the odds of finding that guy, I think, become much slimmer, which is why, to John's point, I think that's when, if you're just trying to find that big body, that nose tackle, like maybe an Evan Anderson or, you know, Jefferson from LSU or some of those guys, I think that's maybe what you're looking for on late day three. If you're going for a guy who's actually going to generate pressure from the interior, I don't know. Maybe you get lucky at 49, but it's tough. The history of finding those guys in the draft is just, it's not very great.
Yeah. Right, I don't know who this is. What's your thoughts on Mason Smith? That's what Pork Chops got here.
Surprisingly,
LSU.
I mean, yeah, like he kind of checks some boxes there. He was a former 5-star recruit out of LSU. If you guys remember, like Brian Brisee last year, he was also like a really highly talented recruit who suffered injury early in his college career, kind of derailed the trajectory of his career, which is why he got drafted like later in the first round. I think Mason Smith's like a great value version, so why, that's why he's going on day two. But I think someone who's played largely a three technique but has the length to two gap inside between the guards, so that gives you some positional flex. But yeah, like a guy that's been through the process of being a high recruit at a major program, and he started his college career really strong as a freshman, but a torn ACL I think 2 years ago really derailed that. So I think some teams are going to find him as a value on day two because he was on track to maybe being a first round pick. So that's why he could find himself in the top 50. I wouldn't rule out him at 49.
All right, that was going to be my next question. You see him at 49. You answered it for me. There you go. What do you think, Dallas?
I've got nothing to add. That was a great scouting report.
There you go.
Definitely more than I know about Mason Smith.
Yeah, okay. Of course, Porkchop, he's a big LSU fan. Of course, he's gonna bring him up. All right. GB here says, Kenny Jackson or Brandon Fisk? What do you guys got on either one of them? Anything?
Fisk is the guy I'm going to have going at 49 in my mock draft to the Bengals. Okay. So I'm still deciding between him and Aroho Rohu, who I think might be a better fit just from like an age perspective, though. Fisk is a little older, right? So it's, yeah. I don't know if he's a great fit. McKinley Jackson was a guy who I think was a little higher before some of like the testing stuff came in, right? Another bigger nose tackle guy, but I would not expect the Bengals to be in on him before probably day three. Any of those nose tackle guys, really.
Yeah, Fisk is 24. He played like 5 years at some Michigan college, either Western or Central.
Yeah,
5 years Western, just some Western. Michigan college, whatever.
No, I'm
like, what are the directionals?
But he's the classic case of, he tested amazingly, but is that because he's 24 years old? Is that why he like dominated at some point? I think they look at him as like he does not give up on plays, and that's like the number one quality that they look for at all throughout the defense. And yeah, like his motor is one of the best in the class. He was productive. Obviously, he's got athleticism, but he's got T-Rex arms for a defensive tackle when he gets swallowed up sometimes. So I go back and forth with him. I think he has qualities that they like, but I don't know if it would be the best pick for them. But
all right, a couple more, and I'll get you guys out of here. Ken here says, Christine Boyd, interior tackle, Northern Iowa, or later round. What do you guys, do you know that name? Because I don't.
Yeah.
All right,
I know
cool.
the name. John after you.
Yeah, like I think he is a later round nose tackle. I don't
definitely
foresee him like a fifth or sixth round pick would probably do the trick there because of the lack of play against quality competition, and the production wasn't maybe as good as you would want for a guy who played at that school. But no, like I think rounds, you know, 5 through 7 are going to be where they probably target a nose tackle. I think a name that Dallas mentioned earlier, Evan Anderson, makes a ton of sense. The production is more there compared to maybe some other players at the spot. They've met with him multiple times in this process, and that's a pretty clear tell for them. So, yeah, Evan Anderson would probably be my prediction for the nose tackle, and it's like a 6th or 7th round pick.
Awesome, awesome. Well, this has been good stuff, guys. Good discussion. I'm glad you guys came on. We're almost to the finish line. Go ahead and plug some stuff. John, I'll let you go first. Plug some stuff before I let you get on out of here.
Yeah, just covering the Bengals at AtoZSports.com/Cincinnati. Got a mock draft, I guess, dropping tomorrow. There's only one more day to do it, so that'll be when it comes out.
What do you guys do? You guys got a draft show Thursday night or anything? Or
might hop on with Jake during the draft, and then we'll me and Anthony will chop it up after the pick.
There you go. All right, John. Make sure you guys follow John and The Godfather, because it's Orange and Black Insider Podcast. I think it should be changed to The Godfather and The Brain, but, you know, that's just me. Anyway, thanks, John. Appreciate you, brother.
See you guys.
See ya. All right, now let's go plug some stuff before I let you get out of here.
Yeah, I've got my last mock draft coming out on Thursday, which I've given you some of my picks already here in this show. PFN Bengals podcast, we're doing one more show tomorrow, me and Jay Morrison. And then tomorrow night, me and Ian Cummings, 8 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube. We'll be doing a NFL draft preview, just kind of going over the craziness that could happen in the top 10 and some of the overarching themes and trades and big picture topics we might see in round one. So come check us out, 8 p.m. Eastern. On YouTube for that.
Definitely check that out. I had Ian on last week. He knows his shit. It's ridiculous how much stuff he has right around in his brain. I think he needs to be done and sleep for like a month after draft season's over.
Oh my God, I know. I'll just let him take over tomorrow night. Like that's my plan. Like just let him do everything.
He said he's already got some people scattered for next year's draft. I'm like, holy crap.
Oh, he will have a 2025 mock draft out either Saturday night or Sunday morning. So and the Pro Football Network mock draft simulator will also transition to 2025 if you all want to come over and start doing your own mocks for 2025. So please do so.
Yeah, if you have not had enough mock drafts, you can start doing them next year after Thursday.
Absolutely.
All right, Daz. Appreciate you, man. Thanks, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take it easy. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Those guys are awesome follows. You guys stump me on some of these names. I'm like, I don't know. That's why I just bring the names up, and hopefully these guys know what's gonna happen. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens Thursday night. Like I said, I am concerned. I would like to get Byron Murphy or Johnny Newton. I want one of them too. But also want a right tackle. I love Latham. My concern is I don't think he's going to be there. Fuaga could be there. If I'm saying his name, I'm probably saying his name wrong. That would be a good one too. It's just more I've dug into this stuff. I think Mims might be the target, might be the guy that's there. And maybe if Johnny Newton with his foot falls, maybe we can trade up and get him. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I am concerned about the defensive tackle. That's what we got to fix that, and we got to do the right tackle. So it's going to be fun. Interesting to find out what's going on. But thanks for watching, guys. I've been live streaming on ZTV, YouTube, which I got 2,527 subscribers. So if you guys are watching, please hit the thumbs up. Share the show out. Please subscribe if you haven't. I greatly appreciate it. Also, Facebook, X, Twitch, Rumble, and you can check out on the podcasts on Beanpod, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher Play. Pretty much wherever you get your podcast, please make sure you rate, like, and review. You can also follow me on all those, along with Instagram, Threads, and TikTok. Shout out to Midwest Best Barbecue. If you guys are not going to SmackDown like I am Friday night, head out to Midwest Best. If you don't have tickets yet, because I don't know if it's sold out yet or not, but you can go out there early. I think 7 o'clock, Sissy Hats is going to be there for a pre-show, selling some of their hats. I don't know if Ted Karras is going to be there or not, but I know Sissy Hats is going to be there. You might be able to sign up for the raffles. I don't know that either. But go out there and enjoy. Corey Dillon will be out there. So you can hang out with him. Big Savage Greg. Pork Chop is going to be there. Dale's going to be there. All my boys are going to be there except me. I'll be at SmackDown with my son watching wrestling. But go out there. Go out this week. Enjoy some delicious Midwest Best barbecue wings. Pulled pork sandwiches. It is very, very delicious. And if you're looking for any door windows, please check out Meyer Door and Windows at www.meyercincinnati.com for all your door and windows needs. I got them in my house. I got them down here in the Ice Cave. They are energy efficient, easy to clean, and they look great. Hail Mary's your ticket for the game, my Westside peeps. Reds games will be starting here pretty soon. Head on over there, watch the game on their big-ass TV screen. Enjoy the beer specials. Enjoy the food trucks they have there. They have free parking right across the street. Nice little gym on the west side of Cincinnati. Other than that, tomorrow night I will not be doing a show. I will be on Malik Wright's show. So make sure you guys check that out. I'll be there live in studio. I'm very excited to do this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So Thursday, we're going to do a draft show. I'm doing the pre-show on my normal time. And then we're going to roll into Bengals and Brews. And we're going to have the draft show there. So it's going to be I think a pre-show, me, Dale, Chop, I think Greg's going to be on. I think all four of us going to be on the draft show. So check that out. my show, pre-show Thursday night, and then the draft show on during the draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll find out what in the hell the Bengals are going to do, and then we can get this Super Bowl run started. Make sure you hit the thumbs up, like, subscribe, share. That's your sports, baby. See ya!